Next is in the matter of Rodrigo Sanchez. May we please have appearances of counsel?
Sustained FELSVMSTEIN, Assistant Ethics Counsel with the Office of Attorney General.
Mark Garfinkel, GARFINKLE, Morristown, New Jersey, on behalf of the respondent.
And that's the respondent next to you, Mr. Sanchez? Mr. Sanchez, you'll have the opportunity, because this is a potential disbarment case, to address the court after your attorney does, and you're welcome to speak privately with him before you decide whether to do so. Very well. Mr. Felsenstein.
May it please the court, Chief Justice Ravner, Associate Justices. I would ask, Mr. Chief Justice, I don't think I'm going to need it. Could I have 2 minutes rebuttal at the end? I don't think I'm going to need it, but.
On a disbarment matter, the respondent gets the last word. Okay. So I'll allow you to respond to Mr. Garfinkel.
That's fine. Thank you. The Office of Attorney Ethics comes before this honorable court following receipt of an order requiring respondent Rodrigo Sanchez to show cause why he should not be disbarred or otherwise disciplined. It is the position of the Office of Attorney Ethics that is recommended by the Special Ethics Adjudicator, the Honorable Edwin Stern, and by the Disciplinary Review Board, that the multiple violations of the rules of professional conduct mandate respondent's disbarment. Both the Special Ethics Adjudicator and the board believed that disbarment was appropriate for respondent's knowing misappropriation under a theory of willful blindness. You will undoubtedly hear from respondent's new counsel that respondent did not receive good counsel prior to and during the 9-day hearing in this matter. But that argument is an attempt at revisionist history and to intentionally blur the lines between attorney's strategic decisions and malpractice. Briefly, since I know the court is knowledgeable of the facts, in multiple client matters, respondent knowingly misappropriated entrusted funds in violation of RPC 1.15A and the principles of In re Wilson and In re Hollandonner. In the Johnson estate matter, after paying himself his flat fee of $12,000, respondent then used the $104,000 remaining in his trust account for more legal fees, expenses such as rent, postage, and gas unrelated to the client. And he went to a negative balance in the account. Money was being taken by respondent for a year before any distributions were made to the clients. Respondent did not deny any exhibit or any transaction during the hearing. In the Sanders personal injury litigation, respondent was to hold monies in trust to cover two liens and instead paid monies to himself and could not cover the liens. Despite respondent's story that it happened, but it wasn't him who did it, respondent admitted during the hearing that he signed the checks which caused the misappropriation. In the Williams workers' compensation matter, what respondent was obligated to hold monies in trust to cover a lien and instead used the money and then delayed payment for over a year, eventually paying the lien not from his trust account, but from his business account. In the Hawkins matter, $240,000 was wired to respondent's trust account, and respondent proceeded to use the fund as his own account, eventually going to a negative $94,000 balance and invading the funds of 17 other clients, all while providing the client with incorrect detailed monthly expense reports. The board correctly determined that the documents, none of which were objected to at the hearing, and the testimony, including from respondent himself, established that respondent knew that client and third-party funds were being invaded as a slush fund for office expenses and that respondent took no steps to protect those funds.
Can I ask you a question with respect to Hawkins as an example? These monthly expense reports that were sent to the client, how were they prepared, and to what extent does the record tell us of respondent's involvement?
Respondent would go over with the client. They were prepared in writing. Mr. Hawkins would come into the office, and Mr. Sanchez would go over those reports with Mr. Hawkins. I think it was also his office manager at the time, Vilma Torres, who would do that as well. But it was Mr. Sanchez's testimony that he would go over those reports, and obviously those reports were incorrect. And then the board took that as a fact that you can't have it both ways, not no, but then you do know showing willful blindness.
Thank you.
The investigation in this matter goes back many years, and only now does respondent claim ineffective assistance of counsel, necessitating a new hearing because an expert was not proffered, saying that respondent lacked competency or the ability to comprehend, as required by the precedent of this court in Ray Jacobs. There is no right to counsel in a disciplinary proceeding, and there is certainly no right to a perfect representation. Without doubt, there is no perfect file, no perfect matter, and no case where an attorney has not made a strategic mistake here or there. Respondent ignores the extensive history in this matter and what was actually relied upon. Respondent ignores the fact that hundreds of pages of medical documentation were produced, and nowhere is it even intimated that respondent did not have comprehension or competency. Respondent did not testify during the hearing that he did not understand what was going on. He only went as far as saying, quote, he wasn't in a good place, end of quotes. Respondent met with clients, billed clients, and even handled a disciplinary stipulation with the Office of Attorney Ethics during the period of time that the misappropriations were taking place. He handled the disciplinary matter, executing a consent and affidavit, receiving a reprimand on his own, without any mention during that matter of any issue medically. Much of the misappropriation occurred after respondent had allegedly beaten his addiction. Respondent offered documentation, a letter from his pastor, and a letter from his drug substance abuse counselor, and neither one of them made any mention of respondent's inability to know right from wrong. Respondent did offer the report of a medical expert, Dr. Alexander Ivanov, and he opined that respondent intentionally, and I'm using the word intentionally, turned a blind eye to what was happening in his office. It does not matter what respondent's intent was, and this court has found that even if respondent was not so clearly aware of the invasions, the intentional and purposeful avoidance of knowing what was taking place will not be a shield to disbarment. There's no mention anywhere that respondent did not see or was not aware of Dr. Ivanov's report. That report was from 2018. So that report has been out there for years, never a mention that there was any issue with that report. Contrary to respondent's current position, one cannot say with a straight face that this matter was not handled fairly. And in fact, fairness weighed heavily throughout in respondent's favor. The record is clear, and no other conclusion can be reached but that respondent must be disbarred to maintain public confidence in our system. And with that, I rely on our papers and ask if there are any questions.
Questions, anyone? Thank you, Mr. Felsenstein.
Thank you.
Mr. Carfinkle.
Chief Justice, Honorable Justices, with your indulgence, I'd like to take 2 minutes as an aside here, because it's something I would like to express unrelated to this case, and I'm not looking to curry favor with this court by so doing, but I've been diagnosed with terminal cancer. I have a pretty limited window, and I just want to express how wonderful it is to have an excellent Supreme Court. I graduated law school shortly after in California, shortly after the Traynor court, and there were still members of that court when I joined, and I was so proud of the California Supreme Court and its understanding of so many things. And I come to New Jersey not knowing what to expect, and I find a court really of equal quality. And it's been a pleasure for me to work within this world. And I just wanted to express that because I probably won't get another opportunity. As to the matter at hand, it's true that there was overwhelming evidence of wrongdoing. It's also true that he was poorly represented, and I'm not trying to blur any lines. It was clear that he did wrong. What was not so clear was his attorney's ability to convey it to the court. And I know the matter was heard by Judge Stern, who would also fit comfortably on this bench. And I believe that he was given
a hearing that within the parameters that he was working with, it was a fair hearing. What rankles here is the optics. And maybe this court's not so concerned with the optics, and maybe you shouldn't even be. But the optics are that here's a man who thought he had a lawyer that really wasn't a lawyer. He tries a case, and experts that he told his lawyer to call and paid for reports and all of that, that never happened. Now, injustices that might have resulted from that, according to Judge Stern, were obviated, and Judge Stern was comfortable with the result. But I'm not. And I'm not because of the optics. Because here's a man who thought he had a lawyer, and he's not asking for a pardon. He's not asking for anything more than a do-over. And maybe if he gets a do-over, it will turn out the same way, and I suspect it will. But that's not the crux. The crux is that he was denied what he thought was full justice by his attorney. And his next time around, if he would be allowed to have that, he can't raise that anymore. But as it stands, it smacks of unfairness, even if it's not unfair. And that is what rankles, the optics. He thought he had a lawyer. He thought he was being represented. He was deceived by his own counsel. And I think that in and of itself is enough to give him a reset and a new start. I want to close simply by saying that I know I don't need to go into the facts of the matter. I know I don't need to go into the law of the matter. But I wanted to go into the optics of the matter, because so much of what we do is in the public eye. Again, I want to thank this court for its dedication, for the thankless work that it does. And I am hopeful that you will look at this matter again with a bit of the view that I've tried to present here today. Again, I thank you, and I'm certainly open to questions.
Anyone? Questions? Thank you, Mr. Garfinkel. Mr. Felsenstein, did you want to respond to anything that we've just heard?
No.
Thank you. Mr. Sanchez, if you'd like to address the court, or if you want a minute to speak with counsel first. Of course.
Good morning, Justice.
If I keep your voice up, please.
Good morning. I understand that what I'm requesting is difficult to understand because no one's been in my shoes, and I hope no one's ever experienced addiction. I grew up out of college. I worked for a nonprofit organization, the Quakers. I coached basketball. I was an athlete my whole life. This was my first experience with drugs, and it was involuntary. I went to the hospital to get treated for a kidney disease, and I was given Oxycontin. I don't think anyone can understand what it does to you unless you have a doctor explaining, a counselor, someone that's been through it to explain what it's like. You're not thinking about reviewing papers, talking to clients, comprehending things. Your whole mind is get back to the drugs. And that's not who I am. I feel like when I had an attorney, it wasn't Mr. Ashley, it was Chris Levers for 8 years. I paid for a doctor, my doctor and my counselor to come testify. I show up a month before the trial, and I find out that my attorney, who turned out to not be an attorney, he was never licensed, he's gone, and now Mr. Ashley's trying to figure out an 8-year-old case in a month. I asked him about the doctor, no doctor got called. At the end, he submitted boxes of medical papers, which Mr. Felsen argued about, that nothing was numbered, nothing was highlighted, pertinent sections weren't provided to the court. And the judge even asked, am I going to be producing a doctor to substantiate what I was testifying to? And Mr. Ashley said, no. It was a complete surprise to me. What I'm saying is, I just wish that a doctor, my drug counselor could come in and explain what a person under the influence or under addiction is going through at that time. You know, attorney came in, My manager explained that they were responsible, but I understand ultimately it was my responsibility, but I didn't have a chance to explain it, my condition at the time. I don't, beginning of 2012 to late 2014 is a blur to me. I mean, you know, I see things that one of the other attorneys had me sign, but I don't recall the conversations. I don't specifically recall what the issues were. It was one of the most horrible times of my life. And I'm not asking for a pardon. I want a real hearing with a real attorney, with my doctor, with my drug counselor, so they can come in and explain what I was going through at that time. I mean, you know, that's just not who I am. And again, this OxyContin and Percocet was forced on me. It was what was going to cure me. And next thing I know, I get out of bed, I have to take it. Lunchtime, I have to take it. Go to bed, I have to take it. It was horrendous. And you know, I just wish that a professional could convey that to the court so they understood what I went through for those 2 years. And I rested that. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We will take the matter under advisement. And Mr. Garfinkel, I just wanted to add our thanks for your very gracious words. We wish you strength and peace.
Thank you.
Court is in recess.